This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
It's time for real stories from those who make our region and our country their home. Time for Making Yourself at Home, thanks to the support from the Ethnic Communities Development Fund.
Good morning, Taranaki. Welcome to Making Yourself at Home on 104.4 FM, Radio Taranaki. Your voice, your choice. We are here with myself, Brian, from the United States, Clara from Spain, our special guest, Emily from France, and Alina from Hungary. Sorry, not Hungary.
I'm very hungry today. I'm from Romania.
Romania, sorry.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome.
I don't know where I am today.
Welcome, everyone.
Welcome. How was your morning?
Cold and wet and windy.
Yeah, and foggy
for the past
also.
Month.
Yeah, beautiful. Yes, I'm so excited to have our guest today, Emily. Would you like to introduce her, Clara?
Yes. Amélie is originally from France, and we are very happy to have her here today. So she now lives near Stratford on a lifestyle block with her husband, two boys, a dog, and a chicken. And she's a mindset and identity coach. She works with moms who wants to feel like themselves again, confident, guilt-free, and unapologetic. Welcome, Amélie. How are you today?
Thank you very much. Good morning. I'm good today, thanks.
So how long have you been living in Taranaki and in New Zealand?
So I've been living in New Zealand for almost 10 years now, and in Taranaki for 5 years. So I was in Auckland previously, 4.5 years, and then slowly we decided, so my husband and I, he's French as well, that we wanted a bit of a different lifestyle, that we wanted to live more in the countryside and a more sustainable life. So we hesitated between Taupo and Taranaki, and then my husband got a job opportunity here, so we just made a move. Mm. Yeah, and we love it there. That's so beautiful.
Can you tell us about your decision on moving to New Zealand from France, presumably, or what was your path to get to New Zealand? And
yes, so that's a question I often get asked. So personally, I've always wanted to live in an English-speaking country. Since I started learning English, I've always loved it. I love languages in general and English in particular, and I knew that I didn't want to live in France, and it just became more and more like important to me as I was in my life. I had something missing. I knew I needed to move. And so my husband and I, we weren't married at the time, but anyway, we wanted a different life, and we had a look at different options. We thought about Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and we just decided that New Zealand would be the best fit for us. I had already been there before when I was 18, and I really loved it. So we moved here on a working holiday visa to see if we really liked living here, and we did. So
yeah, and then you decided to stay.
Yes, mm-hmm. And I'm now a citizen. So
yeah,
yes.
When you were here previously on your working holiday visa, did you move around a lot, and where were you?
No. Sorry, the working holiday visa was how we got here.
Oh, okay.
When I was 18, I visited the country. I visited Christchurch because when I was in high school, there was a girl from Christchurch who did an exchange year in my high school. And then when she left, she was like, "Oh, come and visit us." And then she probably thought that no one would come. But me and another friend were just like, "Okay, let's go for a month to New Zealand just to visit."
And how was that experience, the first time that you were in New Zealand?
Yeah, it was good. It was actually my first time flying as well. I had never been on a plane. I had
only been to England, and then the longest one.
And yeah, it was great. So I had the opportunity, to be so in Christchurch, and that was before the quake, and to travel a little bit around the South Island. I really loved it.
But did you visit Taranaki at that
time? No, only the South Island. Mm. But at that time, I didn't know I would come back. At that time, I was really, really interested in visiting Australia, which I did a few years later. I did an internship for 5 months in Australia in 2008, and I really loved it as well. But then, I don't know, we just chose New Zealand. I think just the landscapes and the fact that it's a smaller country as well really appealed to us.
Can you tell us about how you felt when you arrived in Auckland and started to settle in? What were some surprises? What were some struggles and challenges you might have faced?
So when we first went to Auckland, we had, although it was a work and holiday visa, we had the idea to stay, ideally. So we started looking for a job pretty quickly and looking for like a house to stay with flatmates and be with other New Zealanders. I think what surprised me in Auckland is that how multicultural it is. Because lots of people say that France is very multicultural, but I think in Auckland it's even more. And I also realized that then when I started working recruitment, I had the opportunity to meet people from a lot of different countries that I had actually never come across before, which was really, really cool. Because I love meeting people from different culture. I think that's so rich. In terms of struggles, I actually found it was okay, because I know I managed to land a job after a couple of months, which was really good, I find. It's not that easy in France, for example. I did apply for a lot of jobs, but still, I wouldn't say I struggled. It was actually really good. And then I had the opportunity, I started working in recruitment. The team I was working with was absolutely amazing, which was cool.
And how did you start to create your community here or find your tribe? How was that process of making new friends in a new country?
In Taranaki or even back there?
In general, both when you arrived in Auckland or also like perhaps now in Taranaki that you have settled in here?
Yes, so in Auckland at first it was being with flatmates. That was helpful. We were six living in the house. That's how I started meeting other people, and then also I did a bit of volunteering before I started working, and then through work mainly. I know in my workplace and also where my husband worked, there were lots of like younger people, I mean our age, which made it easy to meet new people, and lots of them were also from abroad. And I don't know if this is something you guys feel too, but
yeah,
I find that it's a bit easier when you're a migrant to connect with other migrants, because we have that in common that we're not from here, even if it's someone from a very different culture sometimes. But it's just
I can definitely relate to that.
Yes.
Some of my friends are from different places.
Yes.
I think it's almost impossible not to make friends from other countries in New Zealand. There
just seems to be so many
expats and migrants in New Zealand. It's really shocking. My experience in Palmerston North, which is a university city, I had extremely little interaction with Kiwis in general.
Yeah.
Just very, very, very few. I'd say less than half the people I interacted with were actually Kiwis.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I find that's normal, because if you have been living here for your whole life or many, many years, perhaps you already have like your community.
Mm-hmm.
And if like us, you arrive new to a country, you are like more willing and more
absolutely.
Open and you need, you
need to connect
and you need to make friends and meet people and discover new places. So I think it happens organically.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then, since I've moved to Taranaki, I guess, one of the things is that we've had kids. So meeting like lots of parents through kindy or even through antenatal class and things like that, and through the swimming pool, it's, I guess once you have kids, makes it easier.
How old are your kids now?
So I've got a 4-year-old boy and a 16-month-old boy.
Wow.
Yeah. So still little.
Very busy mom, right?
Yes. Quite busy, yeah. And just through work before and doing some volunteering as well, because when I moved to Taranaki, my husband had a job, but I didn't.
Yeah.
And at that point in time, I actually wondered if, because I'm really interested in sustainability, I started wondering if I wanted to work more like in gardening. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't, but I did do my level 3 in horticulture at WIT. Mm-hmm. And that's how I started meeting people. And then I did a bit of volunteering at Rotocare and at Hollard Garden before then starting a job. But so all the different ways.
Amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm interested in how you would describe your life on a lifestyle block. I think it's easy to have a very romantic vision of this this type of life. And I'm sure there's a lot of responsibilities and a lot of work that's involved with it.
Yes. So I think I had that romantic vision as well. And yeah, it's not real. But I think I've realized, because when we moved on lifestyle blog, I was 7.5 months pregnant with my first child. And then I realized that all that we wanted to do, it would take a little bit longer. So now I've come to accept that it's not perfect at all, because our ultimate goal, but I'm not even sure we'll get there one day, would be to be fully sustainable in terms of food and energy, which is actually quite ambitious. But really what we have, so our lifestyle block, we've got 4 hectares, and it's half native bush and the other half is paddocks. So at the moment in the paddocks, we don't have our own animals. That would be the goal in a few years' time. We'd like to have a couple of cows, donkeys, and sheep, but we're not there yet. But we do have people who graze their horses. Mm-hmm. And what we've started is we've started a veggie garden, because there was no veggie garden. We started planting some fruit trees as well. Did a few changes in the garden, just making it things more like practical and accessible. We got some chicken. At this stage, what we've made is more like improvements and starting building small stuff. That's a lot of work, but that's why we have woofers and volunteers. I'm actually going to pick one volunteer after this interview who's going to help us. Yes, and that's something we love as well, is having volunteers from around the world to help us, because we couldn't do it without them at the moment. It just wouldn't work.
It's a great thing.
Yes. Yes.
And were you living in France like that also?
Not at all.
You were living in the city?
Yes. Well, originally I'm from a small town in the middle of France. But before I moved here, I used to live in Nice, which is on the French Riviera. So yeah, not huge city, but fairly big city, and yeah, city life. And I used to love the city. Don't get me wrong. Even when I was in Auckland at first, I really loved it. But I don't know if it's going older or what, it just wasn't enough anymore. I just needed something else, something a bit deeper.
So all the living in a lifestyle block was a new experience for you and your husband?
Yes. So
how did you learn like the things around like managing like the animals?
So at this stage we only have chickens, so that's
easy.
Because we know like we couldn't do everything at the same time. It wouldn't be realistic. So we're taking steps. So I started becoming more interested in sustainability in 2018. And that's where I started hearing about permaculture. So in 2019, I did a permaculture certificate for a couple of weeks. So that was done on the in the Capri Coast. And that's where I started learning about these kind of things. Then I did, after that, because I was also interested in sustainable building. That's not the path we ended up choosing, but at that stage, that's something that I really loved. I visited an earthship there in Otaki on the Capri Coast, and then after the permaculture certificate, I did 3 weeks of woofing there because I wanted to learn.
An earth what?
An earthship. So
ship.
Yes.
I don't know that. I've not.
So well, it's originally comes from New Mexico, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I forgot the name
Arcosanti.
Of the guy who started it.
In Arcosanti? Arcosanti.
I don't know.
Okay, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So it's those homes that are made of like. Tires filled with earth run tires.
Yeah, we had this in Romania also.
You do? Okay. There's not a lot of them in New Zealand, but originally it was more like studied in like drier climates, and the walls also covered like a lime plaster, like earth and lime plaster.
Amazing, yeah.
And how, yes. How will that behave here with the rain?
Well,
in Taranaki with the wet weather that we have.
So I'm not sure, because the place, the lady where she, I think she's finished building it now, but so Otaki is not as wet as here, but still. But I think, so some people say will last, other people say, nah, it's too wet, it won't last in the long term. And also, it looks like here, like, engineers are not necessarily trained to that, and it can also be difficult to get a consent, a building consent, to do that. I know there's another one somewhere in the Coromandel, I think, as well, that was featured on TV a few years ago. But it's just beautiful, and that's the kind of things I was interested in. But then we also did a straw bale workshop in Hawke's Bay after that. So that's how, you know, like, you
Lots of trainings.
And we started connecting to people who were like-minded people. So then you start learning more and more about the things. And then, as I said, I did my level 3 in horticulture, and then I did volunteering in the gardens, tried to connect with this community. Yes.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're bringing a lot of knowledge to your lifestyle block there.
Not as much as I'd like to, but yes.
Better than us, right?
Yes, but I think that since I've had kids as well, I don't learn as much as I used to. You know, like some things I just don't have the time, and I need to be more, what did you say, but more mindful of my time. But at least I know who to ask for help, which is good. And if I need like further training, I know who to ask for. And I'm quite excited about the Garden Festival and Sustainable Backyards Trail coming up, because I try to go every year to get inspiration from people who've done it.
Do you have your favorite gardens to go on, or suggest us to go for the festival?
It depends, because it changes. Like some, I know the Sustainable Backyards Trail, I know some I knew, some are returning. There was one, they're in Eltham just before Rotokare. They're called Little Insect Farm, and they've got some very cool things. They do stuff with insects, but they've got a big veggie garden, they've got composting toilets, so all these kind of things that I find very interesting. Otherwise, in terms of the garden festival itself, there's a lady, her name is Dee Turner. She's quite well known in Taranaki.
I volunteered with her before. So
I did like
She's a legend, hey?
Yeah, she is. And I did like a training
garden?
Like
what
about
part of town?
Pardon?
West Town?
West Town, okay.
Yes. Her name of the garden is Corito.
Yeah.
But I always get confused with the areas in New Plymouth, so sorry. I never know where I am when I'm in New Plymouth. I was in Vogelton.
I can't remember the names.
But
her backyard is spectacular.
Yes.
She's a legend. She's a living legend. It's incredible what she's accomplished. Yeah.
Maybe you can share with us the name, because I would like to go there. Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, when I first moved to Taranaki, I wasn't working, so I'd go to help her once a week, I think, maybe twice a week, just to get my hands dirty and grab some fresh veggies for myself on the way out.
Yeah,
she's amazing.
Nice.
Yeah, she came to our place a few years ago, because she can provide advice, and we asked her like to provide some advice on what we could do on our land, and so she very, very knowledgeable.
And how has it been to work with woofers, like the experience of having them and helping them?
Generally, very positive. Mm-hmm. We've never had any issue. I mean, there's always people that you just connect more easily with. Generally very good and hardworking people, willing to learn, willing to share. We've made some good connections. I really enjoy it.
Is there a place where they are coming more from, like, or all over the world, just like random countries?
So Originally, we had people a lot through the woofing website, but this year we started having people from a website called Worldpackers that I came across. So on Worldpackers, it seems mostly people from Canada so far and South America. But and then woofers, we've had quite a few woofers from France, not necessarily by choice, but it was just like that. So probably woofers are more from Europe, but we've had people from France, Germany, Denmark, Czech Republic, Canada, Chile.
Yeah,
I think that, Spain, Italy. Yeah, I think that's it.
Alina or Clara, have you ever woofed?
No, I haven't.
I didn't have the opportunity.
Mm.
Yeah,
I've woofed in Israel.
Wow, amazing.
One place, I mostly kept the fire going. It was kind of an off-the-grid place on the side of a mountain, overlooking a valley and the ocean. It was amazing. It was beautiful. Mm. And pretty much my job was just to pull firewood from the forest and keep a fire going. And then,
important job.
Yeah, and I was also a goat herder in the desert. I was in a 13-family settlement in the middle of a desert. And I took over the shepherding job, and all the goats were pregnant, and I ended up being a goat midwife.
Oh, this is amazing.
I had zero experience with anything to do with animals, really, in terms of agriculture. So that was a very hands-on, dirty experience.
Wow.
And then also in the States, I've woofed around a little bit. I was a woofer with a beekeeper, and I spent about a couple weeks clearing out irrigation canals in Arizona, waiting for a job to start. Yeah, I think
amazing.
That's about it for woofing.
Mm. Yeah, I was midwife to my cat. And I still remember that. I was quite young. I think I was six. And my cat was giving birth. I think it was one of the most amazing things.
And you were 6 years old only?
Yeah, it was very young. It was amazing to see the cat giving birth.
Oh,
to see somebody giving birth, I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
I was interested about your food. And
yes.
Because I mean, I've been to France. I was visiting Paris and around. And I love the cheese.
Yep.
What is something that you bring to New Zealand, or something that you really like about France?
And in terms of food?
Yeah.
That's a tough one. We don't necessarily bring food when we go. Because, there's some food that you can't bring as well, so it can be quite tricky.
Like bring, like metaphorically, like
cook
here, yeah?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I find that what we cook, it's still similar to what's being cooked here, like for example meat and vegetables and carbs, so it's not that different, but then there's things that you can't find so you mentioned the cheese, for example, especially not all cheeses, but lots of cheeses in France are made with raw and pasteurized milk, which is not the case in New Zealand. So that's quite hard to find. And I think something that I can't really find there quite the same is it's easy, but it's the bread.
Yeah.
It's not. So I do.
French bread.
It sounds very French, but.
That's so true.
we understand.
Yeah, because I do bake bread, so not at the moment, but I was thinking about it. I was like, I need to get back into baking bread, actually. I do buy bread here. Sometimes it's not quite the same. Yeah, the baguette, but also like even the sourdough and all different types of bread. And I think, I don't know if it's because here it's more wet, but it doesn't really keep just as well.
I get soft very easily.
Yes.
Like compared to Spain also it's the same. Yeah.
And I think it's because of the humidity. Yeah. So that's
So what things do you cook that are like French recipes?
So just one thing, I don't really like to cook, so but I'm lucky. My husband does love to cook, so he often does most of the cooking. What French things we like to cook? I'm not sure. There's things like when we make crepes, or like the French pancakes.
Oh, I love galettes.
Yes. Mm. So like we, because usually on the 2nd of February, it's called like Pancake Day in France. So that's the day where you, I don't know why, but you make crepe. Otherwise, what we've done is, I don't know if you've heard of it, something called raclette.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, so we actually ended up buying the machine from Stevens or whatever. And yeah, so we do that sometimes.
Mm. Can
we
you share what it is?
Dish,
yeah,
for yeah sorry. So, yeah, sorry. That. So it's, so raclette is the name of the cheese, which we can't find here. So we do it with another cheese. But basically, there's a machine that heats, and inside you put little, like little tiny pans on which you're gonna put some, your slice of cheese. So you put it in there, it melts. Once it's melted, you will pour it on your food, which is, and food will usually be like potatoes, ham, or like things like prosciutto, onions, and you, I mean, you could be on any food, but that's usually like the tradition, like potatoes and some kind of cured meat. Mm. So here we don't necessarily find the same cured meats, but that, yeah, we yeah. found our way,
yeah.
and we do it with other cheese, which yeah. is nice too.
Yeah, so I also like fondue
melted cheese.
A lot.
Yes, okay. yes. So it can be a bit similar to fondue, but different in terms of like fondue is that you dip your bread in the melted cheese, whereas here is like you pour your melted cheese onto your food.
Yeah. Is it possible to find fondue cheese here or not?
I don't know, actually. Okay. I've never tried. I mean,
yeah, we've never tried, but
so we've made one once, because you can make it. Cause, yeah, because fondue, there's different things. There's cheeses that you can buy in France that you can put in the oven and then melt, but otherwise you can just do it with like a pan and you melt any cheese, because usually fondue, it's I think it's with, don't want to be wrong, I think it's with cheese called reblochon, which you won't find here, but you could do it. I've done it with, I think, Swiss cheese and then wine. So you can make it.
Nice. And I am curious about your business. And if you started it here, you were working also as a coach in France. How did it all came together?
So I started my business here. It all came together. It's a bit of a long process. It's like, it's not, I didn't wake up one morning and say, oh, I'm going to be a coach. It's kind of a journey. I'd say about maybe 12 years ago, I started becoming very, very interested in personal development. And so I did some training. I went with some coaches. And then, I don't know, maybe 3-ish years ago, I decided that actually I wanted to support people myself, because in my job, so I have a background, I've done very different things. I've worked in human resources on well-being initiatives. I've worked in recruitment, I've managed teams, and I found out what was missing always. I've wanted to help people, but I wasn't doing it directly. Whereas when I coach someone, I can really make a direct impact on their life. Mm-hmm. And that's what was missing in my life. So I did a training to become a coach. And then I started my business 2.5 years ago. At the time, I was still working full time. I was working for the Ministry of Social Development as an advisor. And yeah, then I got pregnant as well, and I had my second baby. And since the beginning of this year, I started to really shift my focus in coaching on working moms. Mm-hmm. Because I think so that's something I've experienced myself, and then when I talk to other moms, there's a lot of mom guilt that's being felt once you have kids for very different reasons, for like feeling guilty to be at work, when you want to be with your kids. When you're with your kids, you think about your work. Mm-hmm. Then there are people who say, oh, that you should stay at home with your kids, but you don't want to. Very different feelings. And what I'm trying to advocate here is that I just want people to be free to be themselves. Mm-hmm. Freedom is a very, very big value for me. And I think that's why we started moving on a lifestyle blog, you know, all these things, permaculture, it's all linked together. And there's lots of judgment in life and on social media, just crazy.
What you should be doing.
Yes, exactly. So if you could just let people be, you know, live your life, what will work for you won't work for me, and that's okay, we're all different. But sometimes I find once you become a mom, it's kind of like, oh, you have to be that mom and be that parent, and that's how you do it, period. Which drives me crazy. And yeah, I just find that we should be allowed, if we want to have a career and to do something meaningful that matters to us. I think what's really important for our kids is to be happy. That's there's a big ripple effect on your family. That's what's really important to me. So yes, that's my journey, and I started with one-on-one coaching. I do workshop through the Chamber of Commerce, through the Stratford Business Association, and soon I'm going to launch an online coaching program as well. And I'm developing as well an offer at the moment with so to work with moms, but also with their employers. Mm-hmm. Because recently I've done a lot of research interviews with moms, with HR leaders, and one of the things that sometimes, not always, that can be missing is when moms return to work, there can be a lack from some managers, again, I'm not being generic here, but of compassion and or not necessarily knowing how to support that return to work, mm-hmm. which can be really overwhelming for a mom. And also for a leader, it's not necessarily easy. The mom left, then someone is doing the job, then she comes back. How do you do that? Not that everyone has the tools. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's about giving the tools. And yes, I think for me, what's really important is leading with empathy and compassion. Because mm-hmm. that's often what's missing. I've heard lots of working moms saying, oh, like they didn't listen to me, or like the person didn't care. Because one thing is that when you come back from maternity leave, you're not, once you have kids, you're not that same person that you were. And that's what I try to help moms find, is that clarity on who you are. You're not the person you were before. Who are you beyond the roles, the mom, the wife or partner or professional? Who are you? Finding that new identity.
It sounds like your coaching approach is very individualized for each individual.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what I want to do as well. Even though I'm going to launch a group program, I want to make sure like everyone like defines their own goals for their own lives, because we're all different, so we can't have the same goals. And that's what I do when I do workshops as well through the chamber. Because originally I started in one-on-one coaching because I love having one-on-one conversations. I'm an introvert and I like the deep, meaningful connections. But I've realized I also love the group interaction. Because when moms are like sit together, they realize that they're not the only ones to feel mom guilt and loss of confidence or things like that. So they realize, oh, I'm not alone. And providing that safe space to share is so important. Feeling that you can come here and not be judged. Because as I said before, there's so much judgment out there, especially on social media. It can be really toxic, especially when you're a first-time mom. So yes, providing that safe space. And yes, as you were saying, having something quite individualistic, that it's a group interaction, but it's something that you will take and that will work for you.
Yeah, I can relate to the power of, I am not a mom, but I have been to like some group sharing and like women's circles or the work that I do in a group, people always say that sometimes they don't have that space where they can just be themselves and share in a group, but from your personal experience without the other people commenting whether it's right or wrong. It's more about like being heard and having that space so that you can share your view and perhaps someone will not say anything, but that person might relate to what you are saying.
Absolutely.
And might help them even if they are not commenting on it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Just the fact that, talking and being heard is massive. Because even when we speak, not many people hear you. When you have a conversation, people tend to speak and then the other person speaks, but who actively listens? Not that many of us. Like everything goes fast and you have to talk and interact, blah, blah, blah. But just take the time to listen. And that's what I love to do.
Yeah, so I can see that group will be like very valuable for women.
Yes.
Together with the one-on-one work.
Yes.
You mentioned helping people find what they want. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a few of your favorite examples about how you facilitate one defining those things?
Yes. So one of the things I like to start with is defining what your values are. Often, like when people come to see me, my clients come to see me, they feel disconnected somehow in their life. So going back to what your values are is really the start to, because once you know what your values are and then you can work out what you want, once everything is aligned, then it's the basis to actually build your life. So exercise on finding your values, that's always what I start with. Then another thing that I like to do is practice some mindfulness. So I've been practicing mindfulness for 7-8 years. And that's something I'm quite passionate about. I did a couple of sessions for Flourish Taranaki this year. And because people often think, mindfulness, that's meditation, but many people don't have time to meditate an hour every day, especially when you're a mom with like very young kids. So is how we can incorporate mindfulness in your everyday life. So I like to make tools that are practical. Things like, for example, when you go, just before you go to bed, think of 3 things that went well today or that were good in your life or that you did well. Just so that when you go to sleep, you focus on something positive. It doesn't have to be big things, but at least to reframe, and it helps with your mindset and finish your day with positivity. That's simple things like that I do.
Yeah, I think it's very important to start with the simple, because if not, you can get overwhelmed, and then you end up doing nothing.
Yes, exactly, because so that's my point.
Better to start easy and simple so that you can stick with that.
Yes, because I want it to be sustainable in time, because it's nice, you have a coach, that's cool, but when that coaching is finished, what happens? Do you go back to your old habits? So it's about building those sustainable, simple habits that will last over time, because otherwise I will just go away. And that's not the point.
Should we have the last question?
Yeah,
I'm just looking at the time.
You just read my mind, Alina. Awesome.
So do you have a website any of our listeners are
good
interested
idea.
In becoming a client?
Yes. So my website is actually my name. So it's www.ameliemoncel.com.
Okay.
And I'm also on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook under my name.
And on
then
our Facebook page for the episode, we'll make sure we have that link to share for folks.
Yeah.
Cool.
Amazing. So, our last question for our guest is, what would you recommend to new people that come to New Zealand or they move to another country? What would you tell them to do first?
Do they already have a job or not necessarily?
Good question.
Because otherwise I would say, volunteer, for example, is a good way to meet people and to get some professional experience, even if it's unpaid, and to make connections. Give a bit of your time and get to meet people. I think that would be my advice. Yes.
Amazing.
Don't stay in your room, like, get out. Or, yeah. Like, when we first moved to New Zealand, there was, I don't know if it's, I don't use it anymore, but this app, Meetup.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So I went to a few meetings through Meetup just to meet people. It was, really good.
Amazing.
So put yourself up.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Even if you're an introvert, it's good.
Is Meetup good. Still a thing?
Maybe, I don't know. I haven't been to any lately, but I think it still exists.
Or maybe in the big cities. I haven't looked into it in Taranaki.
I haven't looked into meetups in Taranaki. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm. It's something to explore for the next time, right?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. Really nice to be here today.
Yeah, it was lovely to meet you, Amelie.
Thank you so much for coming. See you guys next time, next Monday, same time, same place. Thank you, Brian, for coming, and Clara. And Amelie, how do you say goodbye? Au revoir, right?
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
That's it.
Au revoir.
And how do you say nice to meet you?
Sorry.
I forgot.
Enchanté is more like nice
enchanté,
to meet you, but
yes.
It's when you say goodbye, it's more... Ravi de vous avoir rencontré.
Ravi de vous avoir rencontré.
Yep, that's it.
Oui, okay. Merci beaucoup.
Merci
beaucoup.
Merci. See you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.